Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hi, guys. Quentin from Murdo here. We're sat with DT, and we are at Alexon headquarters, Euston Road behind us. So if there's any loud noises, that's what that is. And we're going to be talking about Alexon's role in the energy system, openness, data, the balancing and settlements code, and a load of other stuff. So, Aditi, thank you so much for coming on and taking time out of your day. How are we here? Who's Aditi, and what do you do at Alexon?
Right, so I'm a lawyer by profession and practice, and I'm a part of the legal team here at Alexon. I'm a legal counsel, and I usually sort of am involved in all activities at Alexon, which ranges from sort of taking industry modifications through to sort of Ofgem level and recommendations, right down to sort of in getting involved in any queries that come in from market or industry or just people that are not necessarily even a part of the BSC or parties to BSC as we refer to them here at Alexon. So just anybody that's interested in anything we do or want to do anything innovative in the market that gets in touch with us. If there's a legal angle to be considered,
it's
I'm there.
Okay, yeah. Right, makes sense. Before Alexon, were you in energy stuff or were you doing other types of law?
So like most sort of commercial lawyers, I started out with doing contracts, and I was quite lucky to kind of be part of doing that sort of activity for blue chip companies like Toshiba, and did a bit of for WDS Global and things like that. So my role was essentially commercial, and then I moved into the energy sector. Sort of about 10, 15 years ago now, and I've been focused on electricity for the last 7 or 8 years of that.
Okay, and what does Alexon do? One of the things I want to make sure we cover in this podcast is exactly where Alexon sits in the electricity system, because Alexon does a really important job, and a lot of folks maybe don't even know that it exists, or secondly, what that job is. Alexon does a great job of promoting itself online, and we use the acronym Buster quite a lot at Modo. But yeah, for anybody who's listening and doesn't fully understand this thing, let's make sure we explain that today.
Sure.
So what is Alexon?
So we're basically a not-for-profit organization. So I'd like to kind of get started on that point, simply because that might help to put our role a little bit more in context for your viewers that aren't necessarily well-versed with Alexon itself or what we do. In a nutshell, we settle contracts for the electricity industry. Now, these are contracts that are entered into by suppliers and generators. Mm-hmm. And to put a bit more context to that activity as well, we need to kind of look at the bigger picture here. Electricity is not like gas. I think a lot of people know that. But from our perspective, the key difference is it can't be stored like gas can be stored, which makes it intrinsically difficult to manage on the network, because it's got to be balanced, or the term that we use in industry is balanced on a second-to-second basis. And that role is undertaken by the electricity system operator. Where we come into the picture
is National Grid.
Which is National Grid, yes, commonly known as National Grid. Whether it stays National Grid or changes, we'll see in future, but that changes afoot. Where we come into the picture is all of this has to be commercialized as an activity or contractualized. And that's usually done through the wholesale markets. Mm-hmm. So essentially suppliers and generators, to keep it very simple, they meet in a marketplace called the wholesale market. They decide how much electricity they're buying or selling in future. So that can be day ahead, it can be intraday, as in the same day. And those contracts are then sent to us, essentially. We look at what they said they would be buying or selling, and then check whether they actually did that. Now, the reason why often they won't have done that is because you can't predict demand or generation to the nth degree. And that's increasingly the case at the moment because of all the renewable generation that we've got on board. And of course, we could go into a whole lot more detail on that. But suffice to say that if you've got a nuclear power plant that's going to be generating an X amount of electricity every half hour, which is typically our settlement period here in the UK.
So like a flat line, base load
generation.
Just chugging away, doing its thing.
Absolutely.
Right?
Until you make it stop, which hopefully doesn't happen. But you get the picture.
So that's the old world, isn't
that's
it?
The
where
old
it's very
world.
Predictable and you know what's going to happen. Sorry.
No, absolutely. But what's happened is, of course, we want more renewable generation and we want that to happen. But a large part of that is either solar or wind. And famously, you can't predict the sun and you can't predict the wind. Mm-hmm. And particularly in this country. So, so taking that into account, what we now have is a large part of intermittent generation. playing a large part or supplying the pool of generation, if you like, in the country and on the network. And because you can't store electricity, you've now got the situation where you don't know how much is being generated, but you have to make sure that it doesn't exceed the demand on the network. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you've got increasing demand, which again is becoming unpredictable because you've got a large amount of electrification happening across the board. So to give you an example, a large number of us are now moving from sort of gas heating or gas-based heating into sort of underfloor heating, which is largely electric, or electric vehicles. You know, a number of us are switching from our gas guzzlers and to kind of do the right thing with the environment and moving to EV charging, or EVs as they're called. And what's been happening as a result is the demand aspect of things also can't be predicted as well as it possibly will have been in the past. So you've got this sort of imbalance being created on a sort of regular basis now, more and more regular as time has gone on, with the demand as well as the supply. And you now have a situation where more balancing actions are having to be taken by the electricity system operator. So, as a result.
If I use an analogy here, so let's use an example. So let's say Ørsted owns a big wind farm, and they have to sell that power in advance, right? Day ahead. Let's say day ahead.
Sure.
It's not always like this, but let's say day ahead.
Yeah.
And so they have to say, I think it's going to be quite windy tomorrow, and therefore I'm going to generate 100 megawatts for my wind farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day happens. And for a bit of that time, it's 100 megawatts of wind, but some of it's 98 or 96 or 102, right? Because you can't control exactly how much wind there is. And so when they differ from what they've agreed, they sold that power day ahead to another counterparty, let's say British Gas or someone, right?
Yeah.
And then when the thing actually happens, it's real time. There's a difference in what they agreed, those two counterparties, what they agreed to buy and sell. And so do I understand this, if I'm explaining this, do I understand that Elexon comes in and makes that difference whole again, or holds them to account for that difference?
I think the latter half is probably more correct.
Yeah.
To say that we hold them to account for getting those positions wrong. And it might sound really harsh because, you know, anybody just listening into this podcast that, you know, hasn't really had much to do with the industry is going to think, well, why are you slamming them for this?
Yeah.
And ultimately, who's paying those charges? It's going to be flowing to the consumer in some part, isn't it? So how is this right? And it's a fair question. But the point really is that those actions, so when, for example, Ørsted in this situation will have said, well, we're generating an X amount and they haven't, there is a shortfall on that system if there was a demand to match that 100 megawatts. So which means somebody else has had to come in and fulfill that role.
So it's a rules-based system.
It's a rules-based
system. What Elexon does is says, This is how we are going to make sure these rules get followed.
Correct.
And make sure that legally everybody's encouraged, because it's a rule-based system, to take part in this market.
Yes. Right? And do more to accurately guess what is going to happen, or at least be in a situation to then pay up.
Yeah. Okay. And so do you guys handle the payments as well? So you do the, this is a volume, I'm trying to avoid using industry terms as much as we can on this podcast, and I've already slipped into it. So this is a bit of power that wind farm X has missed out on, or it hasn't been windy enough. So there's a shortfall there, and this is a bit of power over here that someone else had to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do the maths to make sure that the megawatt hours is transferred. Do you also do the payments bit as well?
Yes, we do. And we've got a separate agent, if you like, function with us that actually does that physical settlement for us as well. Yes.
Okay. And so if Elexon almost enforce, I'm not saying you're the police, but Elexon kind of it enables this rules-based system. What are the rules, right? There's a big document that is the rules, right? Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yes, which is the BSC essentially,
which
is the Balancing and Settlement Code, which sets out just exactly what the party's obligations are, depending on who the party is. And we've got a number of different parties that are party to the BSC, for lack of a better word.
We should have some sort of gong that we say, we do every time someone says the word party, and there isn't actually a fun party.
No.
We should have to pay some sort of, I don't know, swear box or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, point well made, to be fair. I think we're all guilty of that here anyway. But no, so essentially we've got different types of parties. I mean, to give you an example, you've primarily got generators and suppliers, which would be the obvious aspect. Yep. But you've also called you've also got what we now call VLPs, or virtual lead parties. So this is a role which was created quite recently to help with market access for smaller assets to participate in the market. And we'll probably come on to that in a minute.
Yeah, let's do that later if we can.
Sure, absolutely.
But coming back to the balancing and settlement code. So this is a bit like the Bible for how the electricity world works. Yes. And you guys make sure it happens. So when was this big, long document created? And who created it?
20 years ago, actually, almost to the date, I think. Yeah, it's 20 years ago. And it was created under the auspices of the energy system operator. National Grid has been the single shareholder for Elexon. So we do this, we provide what we call as Part C functionality for the license that National Grid has to operate as the electricity system operator in this country. So we've come in and we're delivering Part C of the functionality of that license and the requirements that that puts in place. So the BSE is born out of that. But it is an industry document. And so it's modified by industry very often to make sure it's fit for purpose. Mm-hmm. So that the crib sheet, as you call it, the Bible, as you call the industry functions by, is very much owned by industry. And it's very much modified by industry to make sure that it's still something that they can sign up to, that they can comply with. So it's not hard and fast. It's not like a statute that needs to go through parliament for change.
Yeah.
It's far more responsive in that sense.
So the Balancing and Settlements Code is a document. It's like, how many pages is it? Do we know? Putting you on the spot here.
Yes, you are. I think it's more than, I think it was last count of something like 900 something.
900 pages of pure gold.
Yes.
explaining the rules of the electricity system.
We only deal with it in sections.
So it's a really long document, and it was created 20 years ago. So let's talk about that for a second, because 20 years ago, the electricity system looked very different. So we had big centralized power stations that burnt stuff and created electricity and then sent it to big cities, right? And so now, as exactly as you explained 10 minutes ago or so, we've now got lots of distribution connected, small assets, and the world's changed. So you talked about modifications.
Yes.
So this big, long, I keep on calling it the Bible, I'm going to carry on, this Bible of the electricity sector. So you can, so the industry can change it and modify it. How does that work?
So really good question there. And pretty much the core of what we do, apart from the actual settlement functionality, which is largely sort of, mathematical calculations and kind of done by a system. I think a large part of what we as a team here at Elexon do is get engaged in modifications. Mm-hmm. And these are changes that are proposed by anybody, really. I mean, used to be limited to sort of parties to the BSE. But now anybody can really propose a change. Anybody that thinks that something in the market isn't functioning can bring that to our attention, can raise what we call a modification by putting in a proposal to say, right, we don't think this is working for these reasons, and we think this is the solution that could help us achieve where we want to get to. And these modifications, we have a process, of course, that is set out in the BSE for how it has to be conducted. And for
there's a circular argument here where you have to modify the rules about how you make modifications to the BSE. You have to look in the BSE about how to modify the rules for the
A little bit circular, I will admit that, but I think you do need it because there are different sort of. It's really kind of to make the process as flexible as possible without compromising the credibility of the market, which is absolutely key to us. So we will be as flexible as we possibly can without allowing that change to affect the credibility of the settlement process.
So how does that work in practice, right? Because 20 years ago, I'll keep on talking about the 20 years ago, the electricity system had lots of big players in it.
Yes.
With very large balance sheets, with lots of power.
Yes.
And this document was created. But now we have lots of small players, ranging from the consumer or prosumer up to sort of small funds or asset owners or cooperatives. So how do they all get a voice in a world that was created for the big players?
So essentially, I mean, the big players are obviously parties to the BSE. And if you do become a registered supplier or a licensed supplier, as we call that in industry, you will be a party to the BSE. Whether you're a small supplier or a large supplier, you will be party to the BSE. So all of those suppliers, of course, have a voice. But
at some point, I'm going to have to say, ain't no party like a BSE party. but I think I only have to say that because I was told I have to say that
by our team.
You've
done a good job.
I think I just had to put it in there.
That's fine. It's very welcome. And you know, actually, if you you attend some of these work groups, they can be really fun parties if you're interested in the kind of discussions we engage in. Welcome to one of them if you like.
Yeah,
if you like
definitely.
A good party, come along. but no, that actually is another point, is that these work groups are absolutely open. So you don't need to be a party to the BSC in whatever form or measure you might be. You don't need to be involved with Elexon or the BSC to come and have a voice. You ask me whether how people have a voice. You can attend these work groups and be heard. And of course, you know, we will take your concerns on board. These are minuted. So there's a process again set out in the BSC for how these concerns are taken into account. We also run consultations on every single modification. So if you're interested in a change that's being brought in, then that's announced on our website. So not only can you be a part of the work group, if you're not necessarily the proposer, or indeed a supplier or a generator or a party of the BSC, you can still attend the work group, but you can also respond to consultations. These are industry-wide documents. Anybody can respond to consultations, and we're under an obligation to consider these responses and take them into account. So absolutely. And to add to that, we are, I think I should like to say, this is probably me boasting on behalf of Elexon, but we are known as a code manager that's actually quite open to ideas. So we've had people, innovators, come in and just walk in through our doors and discuss ideas with us as the experts in the field, and we will give our opinions on them. So, you know, it's a very open environment that we have.
Can I bring something up now then? We're going to talk about some code changes, but so this, we're energy storage people,
yes.
Right? And we're a square peg that doesn't really fit in a round hole.
Yes.
And it's very, very annoying, right? Because every time anything to do with energy storage happens, you have to fill out all these forms or be a part of the BSC or whatever it is. And you have to say, you have to tick the box saying, I'm a generator.
Yes.
And it's really triggering, right?
Yeah. Strong responses, I should imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. So so what on earth is happening there? Mm-hmm. Right? I'll put you on the spot here a little bit. But the BSC and all of this stuff is built around, are you a generator or are you a supplier? So where does energy storage fit in?
It's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? But I think Ofgem's taken a view that they'd like for this to fit into more of a generation category rather than demand, which alternatively it could have been. I think we're probably, it'd be fair to say that we couldn't consider storage as supply. Simply because you then run into so many obligations that suppliers have, which really you traditionally wouldn't. I mean, there's just no need why you'd need to do all that. But
becoming a licensed supplier is tough, right? You need a big balance sheet. You need to prove that if things go bad, you've got the money to come up with to make whole on whatever happened to you. Right?
I think it kind of traces its root back to kind of the credibility of the system, and therefore you being as supplier, you being able to kind of shoulder the imbalanced costs, which is the cost that you would be paying if you got your predictions wrong, which happens very often, as we've seen now. And that's probably one of the kind of unfortunate reasons in the current climate where we've seen small suppliers kind of go under, unfortunately. So really, I mean, we do need something that prevents that.
That's really interesting because, the reason why small suppliers have gone, and there's loads of reasons, right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to post-mortem this too much, but when it comes down to it, the fact that it's a rules-based system, and if you use power or energy, you have to pay for it at some point, and Elexon makes sure that everybody has to pay for what they use, the fact that that system is looked after by Elexon is part of the reason why suppliers do go bust, right? If everyone wasn't held to the rules, then this system wouldn't work at all. So I'm not blaming Elexon for a bulb going under. That's not what I'm doing, but it's part of the system needs to work, and the system needs to work in a way that everybody's on the hook for what they say they're going to do.
That is true, because I think ultimately we're looking at three things, really, aren't we? We're looking at making sure that the system is credible, i.e. the lights do stay on.
I think
that's the key thing. We're interested in making sure that consumers aren't paying more than what they should be paying.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that it's really difficult at the moment to kind of, this is going to, it's like opening Pandora's box, because obviously the wholesale costs have shot up. But the point here is that Elexon's role is to ensure that the settlement system works.
Yeah.
And the settlement system is designed in the way it's been designed to ensure that there's credibility in the system, i.e. consumers have a guarantee that when they turn on that switch, there is going to be electricity that's going to come on. And more importantly, that they're not going to have to pay through their noses on a daily basis, trying to negotiate contracts with suppliers or whatever, or dealing with the big boys when really they shouldn't be doing that. So it's a system that protects the consumer. It brings credibility. It brings trustworthiness. And I think it's worthwhile protecting it.
So who pays Elexon? So if Elexon's a not-for-profit organization, and then Elexon has all the overheads and cost of making, you know, having the balancing mechanism reporting service and making all this data open and available. And just generally doing the Elexon stuff, which is, there must be a lot of cost associated with that, but it does help the industry, don't get me wrong. Who pays for all that?
So the BSC parties do, in mm-hmm. a nutshell. And essentially, it comes to us as a part of the fees that they have to pay to become a party to the code, which is a requirement in law.
Okay.
So in a nutshell, it's industry which is paying for it, but more importantly, BSC parties.
Okay. Coming back to key code changes. I almost got the wrong way around. So what sort of changes have happened recently or are happening that we should probably cover here? I know lots of them have got P numbers.
Yes.
Right?
So we like our P numbers.
Yeah.
And our modifications usually do have, no, they all have P numbers. Let's just put it that
yep.
way. Others are change proposals. So coming back to your point, sorry, I get into so much detail sometimes, I'm going to lose sight of the question. Apologies.
No, do it. Let's do it. So after you.
Yeah. So I think the few that I would definitely like to mention, especially keeping your audience in mind, mm-hmm. Storage people, essentially either grid-connected storage or co-located storage. This is really all about increasing market access, reducing barriers, lowering thresholds for entry into the market, so that
yeah.
assets, we like to call them assets, essentially
sure,
generation,
so do we, yeah.
Yeah, generation demand or anything really, that it can bring value towards balancing the market, actually does have the opportunity to participate in that service.
Yeah.
And there are a number of sort of smaller markets that do kind of facilitate things to that end. So you've got the balancing mechanism, mm-hmm. you've got the ancillary markets, you've got the reserves market, the wholesale market, of course, mm-hmm. which we're trying to make sure that we allow for these assets to participate directly as much as possible into these markets, so it kind of affords them with a revenue generation stream that hasn't existed so far. But it also works for the energy system operator or the electricity system operator, because these assets then become visible to the
yeah.
energy system operator, which is a big win for them.
So we're talking about virtual lead party right now,
yes.
right? So, and that's what P number is that?
So that was P344.
P344.
Yeah.
And in layman's terms, I'll have a go at this. Mm-hmm. So loads of distribution connected batteries were getting built.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for them to be in the balancing mechanism because National Grid wants to use those kind of assets. But to be in the BM, you had to be a party, a BSC party. And that meant that you had to go through all of the complicated market access stuff. You had to get physical lines between you and National Grid.
Yes.
There was a cost and expense. And that was a barrier to entry. So
yes.
Elexon, or I don't know who proposed it, but Elexon facilitated a change which meant that smaller assets could play in the BM and provide this really valuable flexibility to National Grid.
That's correct.
Without having to go through all the rigmarole of being a BSC party, they could do it virtually.
That's
is that
correct.
Right?
Yes, that is absolutely right. So essentially, if I was to sort of press a legal point, it would be that the VLPs don't take balance responsibility.
Okay.
So the key point here is that they're not suppliers.
Yeah.
So they play this sort of interim role, if you like. They're sort of a sub player in mm-hmm. the market, but they still can provide the services that a supplier would have otherwise provided to these assets by taking them into the balancing mechanism. So the virtual lead party is not a supplier, it doesn't take balance responsibility, but it still is able to trade in the balancing mechanism, and that's P344 for you.
Yeah.
But then we realized actually it's not gone far enough. And so we brought on P375. So it was proposed obviously by an industry party. But we've...
Can we say who it is? Can we shout them out?
P375, what was
P375
it? Flexitricity, of course. Yes, it was.
Thank
yes,
you, Flexitricity,
yes, yes.
for this.
Yes, definitely. So Flexitricity is...
Other aggregators and BSC parties are available.
Yes. Yes, so Flexitricity proposed this, and we, Elexon, obviously, we were very much in favor of this change, and so has
yeah.
industry been. It's been very, very welcoming, and Lord Reedsdale actually called this a game changer, which I have to agree with, because if you think about what this has done, is it's allowed for a settlement type situation to actually be undertaken behind the boundary point. Now, Elexon traditionally is stopped at the boundary point. We kind of don't get involved with anything that happens behind. But you've got a lot of these assets. So it might be a battery storage facility that's co-located that doesn't actually have its own metering point.
Like a behind-the-meter battery on a big steel plant or a big manufacturer, which until now couldn't play in the BM because it was all the only way that they could is at the boundary meter.
Yes, that's
and now you're saying, well, we'll net it off. We'll net off those flows behind the boundary meter. And so everybody can play in the BM behind the meter.
Correct.
Which is incredible.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Has any other country done this?
I'm not sure, actually, to be fair. I'd like to think that we're leaders in this, especially in the way that we're structured. So, you know, not, I mean, different countries have different sort of systems and they're structured differently.
We don't have a BM in all countries.
Well, exactly. So, and some of them do have direct access into the wholesale market or the markets are structured differently. But the way we're structured, we're, I think we're probably the only ones that are, or at least the first ones. That have done this.
And it's win-win, right? Because National Grid gets access to more assets to balance the system, which should reduce the costs of balancing the system and the flexibility of the system.
Absolutely. And I think the key thing here is to bring on these assets that are not, that are almost underutilized. They can probably do more and they can be motivated to participate and be more dynamic and provide that response to market and get compensated for it. Because otherwise, why would you participate?
You know what really excites me is that this is almost, I know this this is a very ambitious project, right? But this is almost the first step, right? Because you can do this and you have the data and you have the controls. Why not do it with an EV fleet or, you know, domestic batteries? You know, why don't we go as small as we possibly can and balance all of it in real time?
Absolutely. I think that's definitely where we'd like to see the market headed. I mean, that actually brings us quite nicely to another aspect that we're involved in, which is the market-wide half-hourly settlement. I mean, so far we've obviously talked about more about sort of things that are half-hourly settled or are more industrial or commercial in nature.
So let's just for a second to explain. So metering in the UK, generally speaking, so settlement periods are half an hour, right? But lots of meters out there, they don't work on a half-hour basis. They're just in old-fashioned meters that spin round, and you don't know when the power was, but you have to go and check them, and a meter person comes out and reads the meter. And sorry, I just wanted to explain before you carry on.
Yeah, absolutely key point. And actually, I might add to that and say a lot of us, I mean, I have a smart meter at home, right? And now it's capable of actually being settled on a half-hourly basis. It is, because it's able to kind of, you know, give that information in half-hourly chunks to the HHDC or HHDA, whoever's involved. Half-hourly data collectors, or half-hourly data.
We
aggregates.
Got so far through this podcast without a load of Alexon.
I do apologize. I was doing so well.
The gong again.
Stay away from that. Redo this. Okay. So we've got smart meters that are actually capable of providing those half-hourly readings to allow for half-hourly settlement. But a lot of those, unfortunately, are still, I like to harshly call stupid, because they're not really being settled on a half-hourly basis. They're not very smart at the moment.
Yeah.
But they are obviously capable. And this piece of work, the market-wide half-hourly settlement aspect, will actually change that. It will allow them to rise to the occasion, as I call it, and actually provide and do the job they were born to do, which is to provide that data on a second-to-second or minute-to-minute basis.
And if we go back to why, right? The reason, if I understand this correctly, the reason why half-hour settlement is important is because people get paid people can pay different amounts for the energy each half hour, which means they can be encouraged to, I don't know, charge their car at a cheap price rather than a flat rate across the day. So if everybody's on half hour, I'm simplifying here, but if everybody gets settled on a half hour basis, we can get actual consumer change in behavior, which should hopefully bring down costs of balancing the system and decarbonization and all that stuff. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's actually just allowing the system to be more reflective of what the situation in the market actually is. So if you think about it, everybody goes home at 4 o'clock, or at least used to pre-pandemic when people were commuting more. And you're going to want to go and go home and charge your car, you know, turn up the kettle, make yourself a cup of tea. There's going to be a demand surge. And we know that traditionally that demand surge happens between the hours of 4 to 7 in the evening, typically. And of course, electricity is more expensive at that point, just as a result, because there's higher demand. It's just market dynamics. But unfortunately, that doesn't translate into how people pay, because the flip side of that is no one's really using that much electricity between the hours of 2 and 3 in the morning, for example. And electricity could be and is really in that half hour cheap, way cheaper than what you'd be paying between 4 and 7. But as a consumer, I don't get the benefit of actually running my washing machine or my dishwasher, for example, between the hours of 2 and 3. I'm still paying the same charge. And that isn't helping anybody, really. So what we're trying to do is facilitate that half-hourly settlement, which means that every half hour, you have a choice of the price that you pay for that half hour.
Okay.
So that gives more power to consumers eventually, because hopefully, obviously the missing step here is the time of use tariffs. But suppliers have been meaning to bring that into the picture for a long, long time, which means consumers will have a tariff which is based on their usage, not just the amount, but also the time.
Yeah. And I guess 20 years ago when the BSC, the Bible, was created, we couldn't really think forward 20 years to know that this data would be, you know, the cost of doing this and putting smart meters was going to be cheap enough. So that's why we have to modify this thing constantly. And we don't know now what the BSC will look like in 2050.
Oh.
So how do we do a modification? So we want to put the Modo modification in, and we want to make it so, we want to match Australia and do 5-minute settlement periods.
Right.
How do we make that happen?
Right. You just pick up the phone, call us, ask us.
We've got a direct line now.
Get mods through. Just pick up the phone, talk to us, and tell us that you want to raise a modification. You will then be asked to fill in a proposal form, which you can fill in, which is essentially just 4 or 5 things. It just tells us what it is that you think isn't working. Why do you think it's not working? What do you think the solution could be? And why you think it's a good idea for industry to adopt that? Because at the end of the day, as we discussed, Elexon, our funds come in from industry. So there is a cost-benefit analysis that we must undertake to make sure that any change that's being proposed is actually going to be beneficial to industry more widely. And it's going to deliver to the consumers as well.
Can we choose our own P number?
I don't actually know the answer to that.
Well, who comes up with a P number?
Well, it just kind of rolls off our ledger of numbers. So we've gone so far. But there have been fun times when certain P numbers have actually gone through the modification process earlier than others. So you end up with a P3, for example, 95 after a P420. And you're just like, how did you? What? But
I'm going to put P1000 in now for 30-second settlement. And it's going to take so long to get there. That's why I was thinking P1000.
Right. I'm going to have to leave that to my colleagues in operations to answer, given that they're probably going to, I'm going to say something and they're going to come chasing straight after me going, no, we can't have that, or absolutely can do.
I'm joking, right? But we talk a lot in the... how do we get to second by second metering? Like, because if basically the shorter the time period of the settlement period, the more you can get to like a real liquid market, right?
A real-time settlement.
Real-time settlement. Real-time settlement means, it should mean lower costs. It should, in the same way that real-time settlement of, I don't know, stocks and shares or whatever, means that participation is, you don't have to price in risk about time periods in the same kind of way. So it should be lower cost for everybody. So how do we get to real-time? I know we'll never get to perfectly real-time because, as you said at the beginning, we're not trading. Yeah, there's lag, and there's lag. Good point. But also, electricity has to be balanced, and there's a balancing element. How short a settlement period do you reckon we're going to get to?
Ooh, I mean, I wouldn't like to put a number on that at all at this point, given where we are in the scheme of things. But what I can say is we're definitely making changes, and to the BSC and industry wide, there's a great momentum to kind of go towards a more reflective system, a system that's more reflective of the reality of the situation. And of course, settlement and bringing those settlement periods potentially down from half hour might be one way of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point in time, it's really important that we make sure that we get the data first. We don't actually have the data first to kind of allow for that analysis just to see, well, whether 1 second settlement would actually be better than a 15 minute one, and which would be sort of more commercially feasible such that the consumers aren't paying any more than they have to. I think that's the key point here.
Yeah,
and so we're not quite there to answer that particular question, but I can definitely say that we're definitely the way forward is more collection of data, near real time collection of data. As well,
because also much of Europe's on 15 minutes as well, right? And we've got Project Tear happening. So what's going on with Project Tear?
Because we
did the Brexit thing, or we kind of half done it. And we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but it made a bit of a problem for Project Tear, right? So, what's happening now?
So from what I know, we've got systems that are now sort of ready. I mean, obviously we did have a derogation from.
Sorry, I'm gonna, Project TARE is the Trans European Replacement Reserve.
Exchange.
Thank you. Thank goodness you're here.
God, honestly, right. I mean, you're quizzing me.
Yeah, sorry. Right, so this is like Great Britain taking part and Europe sharing balancing actions and kind of having they can have access. The Europeans can have access to. Well, it's really sad saying the Europeans and we're not in it anymore, but Europe can say can access our BM and we can access theirs and all that stuff. So. Sorry to cut across you. That's what Project TARE is. Yes. So what's happening with it?
Right. So essentially that was P344 kind of looked at, allowing access to the sort of the wider access, as you like, for VLPs to participate in the balancing mechanism. And that was also the Project TARE modification. And of course, we've been able to sort of implement Project, so the wider access aspect of it. Well, Project TARE, obviously Brexit happened, and we did have a derogation at that point in time from Europe to say that we didn't have to kind of match the 15-minute settlement period, because that would have been a huge change for us at that point. Yeah. So even if we would have had access to TARE, just coming back to your earlier point, I think it would have been on a 30-minute basis from our perspective. Yeah. Where it's at the moment, I think it's just kind of taken a bit of a backseat whilst we figure out whether we will be allowed into this sort of balancing mechanism on a Europe-wide basis. But there are other alternatives, of course. I mean, we've got interconnectors in place, and traditionally, they would have also been a part of, they might have been able to participate in the TARE balancing activities. But, I mean, we are where we are at this point, and I don't know if I can solve this issue.
No, I understand. it was a bit unfair of me to put you on a spot like that, but it's just something we were talking about this morning. All right, I want to touch on, I know you guys are doing a big project for, so the balancing, BMRS, Balancing Mechanism Reporting Service.
Yes.
Which is both, I think, mostly beloved. by the industry and data geeks like us, but also perhaps it is ready for a bit of a revamp. And you guys are doing a big project about that, and
yes,
I know it's important
right.
to you. So maybe we should talk about that for a second. What is happening there?
So the project's called Kinect, and it's essentially updating our systems. So it's basically making all of that data that was going on to the BMRS, which is the old legacy system, as we like to call it, to make it more accessible, faster, more dynamic, and more accessible. By putting it on a cloud-based platform. Mm-hmm. So it's a cloud-based solution, which then will offer open access to a lot of that data, free of cost, to industry. Anyone that wants to kind of have access to it will have access to it. And it's, a part of it is a customer-facing solution, so which means that you might actually be able to even get data the way that you want it, customized to the way that you want it. So,
nice.
So it's a huge change from where we were.
I think we, Modo, we definitely used, the BMRS API, we probably abused the amount of data we pulled from that. We're probably responsible for a lot of your server costs, so sorry about that.
That's it, nail the culprits.
And one other thing that's just come, so, system sell price and system buy price are the same thing. So why do we get them both?
So again, this is something that is a part of the rules. And it is that way because, you know, we've been a part of the centralized system. And eventually, I think we might get to a point where we might just have one price coming out. Mm-hmm. But for now, the way that the system's designed, we do need a separate sell price and a separate buy price.
Imbalance price, cash out price. What is it? What else do you call it? The NIV price, some people call it. System sell price, system buy price, all for the same thing, the number which you've...
System price, imbalance cost, anything.
The imbalance cost.
It goes by different names. But yeah, eventually I think we might find a happy ground and just call it that one thing.
Yeah.
But for now, I think...
God help anyone who's trying to get their head around this industry right now. I think we're pretty much done. I mean, so have you got anything you want to plug? Anything you want to talk about? This is your chance. Any of the exciting stuff happening at Elexon?
Oh, definitely. Loads of exciting stuff happening at Elexon, always is. We're pretty much at the forefront of industry. I think I'd just like to talk a bit more about our settlements role and how that could kind of be more relevant going forwards, even when, essentially balancing is increasingly happening at a local level.
Yep.
We see that gaining momentum because you've now got sort of markets that DSO, but really LDNO-led markets like UKPN, for example, and you've got, they're willing to do sort of 1 kilowatt sort of activities in the market, which is very, very low threshold and should see far more participation. But at Elexon, we've got a huge amount of experience and expertise just doing settlements at the centralized basis. There's absolutely no reason why we couldn't sort of gain some entry into that space if
settlement was so like DNO-led balancing to manage their system.
Local balancing,
local
yes.
balancing.
Yeah.
A bit like what the Piccolo platform are doing.
Yes.
But you guys could do the settlement bit of it in the same way. Interesting.
Well, it's no reason why we couldn't. Let's just put it that way. So, yeah, we're definitely, you know, interested in kind of getting involved at that level as well, definitely.
Oh, so if it's, I'm sure it's already happening, but we need to get the Elexon people speaking to the DNO people.
Yes.
And make this, link this thing up.
And which is why I think, you know, people should know about us.
yeah, for sure. And so one other thing I'm going to plug on your behalf, which
all
is
right.
the Elexon website. Is it has a lot of great information in there.
Yes, it does.
So all the acronyms, that when our team, we get new joiners, we send them straight to the Elexon website to learn about stuff. There's been some great educational things. I just want to give a shout out to whoever manages that, because I think it's a great, great resource. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens as you make more data available in BMRS.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings us to the end. Aditi, I just want to say thanks for coming on. This has been awesome. Thanks to Elexon for hosting us and giving us Elexon branded water to drink. Hopefully I'm still here this time tomorrow. Until next time. And if anyone's, you know, normal stuff, if you like this conversation, please do comment and let us know what you think. And remember to follow us on Spotify or whatever else you listen on. All right, thanks, guys. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.